and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we have a great guest tonight. I'm really looking forward to this. I do want to tell you, a number of people have written me asking me how Alejandro Rojas is. He's doing fine. Just to let everyone know, he's just been really busy, a lot of changes going on, but he is doing absolutely fine. He was actually going to be on the show this evening, and he is traveling for Thanksgiving. And speaking of that, I want to wish everyone out there a happy Thanksgiving, and if you celebrate here in America, it's a wonderful holiday, I think. Families get together, eat turkey, and hopefully do not talk about politics and just have a really good visit with each other. And our guest tonight, I'm real excited, Bryce Zabel. We had a little brief interview with him out in Phoenix a few years ago. Tonight we got him for the whole show, so I'm pretty excited about that. And what a background he has. We'll talk about that. But in the film industry, he is an incredible background, and has written a lot of wonderful things. And he has a lot of things on his plate at all times. A very active guy and a lot of fun. Welcome to the show, Bryce.
It's great to be with you, Martin. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Let's see. You like I said, you have so much going on all the time out there. And you're having fun. I remember you and I had a conversation, and you mentioned something along the lines of your wife saying, hey, you know, you could do as a good a job as someone else on this. Why don't you see if you can write a screenplay, right?
Oh,
isn't that how that started?
How I got started. Yeah. I thought you were going to say, my wife said, you could do as good a job as that Martin. Why don't you just do a podcast? Which I could not do. I could not do as good a job as you. So forget that.
Yeah.
No, but that actually is what happened. Years ago, when I first came to L.A., I was the CNN correspondent. And as things go on, shows get canceled. The guy that hired me got fired. I ended up having to look for work. And that's when I realized, well, you know, I could be like one of these itinerant news guys just blowing from town to town. And who knows what that life would have been like. But my wife said, well, maybe you should try writing a screenplay. And I'd never written a screenplay before. I said, I don't even know what it looks like. It wasn't like there was an internet to look at it on. This is how long ago it was. But I got a hold of one on Hollywood Boulevard, looked at it, thought, doesn't have a lot of adjectives and adverbs in it, kind of like TV news. Probably can do that. That's what I did.
Ah, wow. Wow. Someone just said, I look haggard. I need a vacation. That was a nice message to get. Thanks,
I don't know
Phil.
If they talked about, because somebody else, I saw the first comment, I think, was something about, did the guy have facial surgery or is that Photoshop? I presume they're talking about me, and it is an older photo, so there is that.
Well, there is a reason I do a podcast that's audio.
Listen, I'm happy to be here, and in fact, I was thrilled. I'm trying a new little light on, and my light over there seems to be shining properly. All is good with the world. Let's talk.
That's right. That's right. And you're out in fire country out there.
I am.
How's that been this year?
Well, to back up, last year it wasn't good at all. Last year I was evacuated.
I remember that.
The fires were blowing through my town on the way in down to Malibu. Many of my friends were affected. It was a terrible and horrible situation. This year, I'd actually gone to Phoenix for a couple of days to visit my daughter. And while I was there, that we started getting all these fire warnings, so I just stayed another week. So I call it a self-evacuation. As it turns out, the fires didn't burn through here, but they could. And, you know, it's just not a Southern California problem, though, anymore. Now we're having fires everywhere. In a few weeks, I'm going to be doing some traveling, and I'll be going to Australia, among other places. And, you know, Australia's on fire right now.
Right.
So,
it's serious.
This kind of stuff happens. I'm happy to hear that our weather forecast says it's going to rain for Thanksgiving. And that's not usually something that you get excited about. But down here it is.
Right. Yeah. I know. It's doesn't seem like it's going to be getting any better anytime soon. I moved out of California in 2010 or 2011 in Northern California, but still, they're even, you know, they're they're threatened up.
That's where paradise happened last year,
right.
And that was horrible. I mean, it's going to be with us for a while, but we have to change. Certainly, we have changed some of our habits. I'll tell you one of the things we did just right immediately after we were evacuated last year. My wife and I each bought a top level scanner that could scan photos fast and documents, and we just started scanning our office and our lives up, because the most horrible thing about the evacuation last year was we hadn't done any of that. Mm-hmm. We didn't know where anything was, and you get 5 minutes to get out, and there's not really time to grab at a photo album or two. And I just didn't want this year, if I lost my house, I didn't want to lose my memories. So we scanned up a bunch of stuff and we're better. Also, you have a suitcase ready to go when the time comes.
Yeah.
You have your cars full of gas in case you need to go.
Yeah.
So, we start to do that. But a lot of us here where I'm living, we have multiple things to worry about. We have the earthquake to worry about.
Yeah.
We have fires to worry about. We have floods to worry about when it rains after the fires. And yet sometimes it feels like paradise here. So,
That's
and the good paradise. Yeah.
When the weather's beautiful out there, you just can't beat it. It's just just nothing like it. But anyway, I want you to you did a series. We talked about it in the last time briefly, but Dark Skies. That was a real interesting one. Can you tell how you got involved in that?
Well, it's funny. It was the greatest creative experience of my career. I really, really enjoyed it. It was obviously the most important UFO project that I've done, although I've talked about it a lot over the years. But my partner on that, Brent Friedman, and I, literally at the time we created that, which now is over two decades in the past, so it's not like a contemporary credit, but it sort of has, like a good wine, it's even improved with age, because it was prescient about a few things that needed to be talked about. But what Brent and I thought at the time, because I was just really starting to bring my my game up on the topic of UFOs. So I knew enough to be dangerous, but I also knew a lot about the Kennedy assassination. And we thought, well, these are the two great conspiracy theories of our time. What if we put them in an atom collider and let them go boom and see what happens? So we made a television series that, in essence, is all about John Kennedy being killed because he was going to tell the truth about UFOs in his second term, which is one of the craziest things to get on television on a broadcast network back then, and yet we did it. And at the time that we did it, we thought it was pretty much an original idea. Now you read more and more about it, partly because we encouraged it into the zeitgeist, but I think there were other, Behold a Pale Horse, that book mentioned it. I didn't know it at the time, but I've since seen it. Anyway, so apropos of some of the things we might want to talk about today, because I think it's really an important way to look at the UFO question, what we decided to ask ourselves is, okay, let's go back to 1947. We know that Kenneth Arnold pretty much saw what he saw, but could have been anything. Do we believe Roswell? Do we believe that Roswell was an event that included the crash of something that was not made by the United States or the Soviet Union? And we thought, we do believe that. So then we sort of jumped ahead and said, if that was true, and we believe it is, then the fact that we weren't talking about it in the 50s or the 60s or the 70s or the 80s means that somebody else was talking about it. And we thought, let's shine the light on the people who would be talking about that in the 1960s. So we built a series around Majestic 12, with Roswell as the source that informed it all. And that's kind of the birth of Dark Skies. Yeah.
Wow, that's great. Well, you think about it, no one really talked about Roswell, shortly after it happened. And then the way up until, Stan Friedman kind of cracked it open again when he spoke with,
Jesse Marcel.
Yeah.
Jesse Marcel.
Right.
Well, in fact, first of all, shout out to Stan Friedman, who's left us this year. A tremendous influence in ufology. Great guy. I literally optioned Stan's book back during Dark Skies, his Top Secret Magic book. And I wasn't able to set it up at the time, but I revisited it a few years back and re-optioned it, plus his life rights, plus Don Schmidt's life rights, plus Don Schmidt's book, Witness to Roswell, and sort of did the old Atom Collider thing again and put them into an Atom Collider and to tell a story about the race to break the Roswell story. And I got to know Stanton quite well. And here, you know, he, for those people who have heard him speak on the circuit, after a while, you sort of, you know, you got the Stan stories down. But what was great for me is I was able to sit him in a chair and, like, pin him down for over 30 hours of talks he'd start to tell me one of the stories that you might hear in the lecture. And I'd go, yeah, I know that story, but, and then I would take him back to something else. And I really got to know him on a personal level, and also some of his professional thoughts that didn't as often get widely shared. And I really enjoyed that relationship. That movie is still alive. We're trying to find a way to get it. It's just, you know what? It's just hard to make anything. Even though there's more production going on, it's hard. And the UFO topic has its own set of rules here in Hollywood, just like, you know, you'd imagine. Some people are able from time to time to pierce that veil. I hope to be one of them on some of these projects you mentioned. But it's not always easy, and it's not always a straight line.
So what do you envision something with Stan Friedman's information? What are you envisioning on creating? Is it something you said you put it in with Don Schmidt's work and all that?
Here's what I thought that was so intriguing. I sort of stumbled across this, you know, in during my travels, if you will. I'd been reading all the stuff that Stan and Don had published over the years. And what was interesting to me, in the 90s, these guys were in basically a shooting war with each other. I mean, Stan would publish an article and Don would snipe at it. And then Stan would snipe at Don's article. And people were picking sides and everything. And I just thought, well, that's kind of intriguing, because it's probably hard enough to prove that UFOs are real. And then when you have to fight each other, that just is doubling down on the difficulty factor, which I think is still true of ufology today. I mean,
absolutely.
The mere talk, you know, bring up Tom DeLonge, you'll get pros and cons, that kind of thing. So here's the thing that just made me as a writer, though, respond to it. It turns out that, and I don't know the exact year, I think it might have been 94, but one of the funding sources that Stan and Don had each gone to help fund their research trips to Roswell to talk to and interview witnesses, this funding group said, well, we'll fund another trip, but you guys need to work together. And so Stan and Don took this legendary trip to interview Roswell witnesses in the 90s, even when they were busy in the public sphere attacking each other as ne'er-do-wells who didn't know anything about anything. So I just thought it was very funny. I thought it was the spoonful of sugar way to tell the Roswell story, to sort of deflect and let people focus on the charm of the two characters having to share a motel when they basically are fighting. And, you know, and you know, Don always comes across as the guy with the nice suit with his tie perfectly tied, and Stan looks a little disheveled, right?
Yeah.
So you can imagine in the hotel room what that might have been like. So anyway, built that around that, and that project, which is had to be retitled, is now called The Crash, and we are actively trying to get that made. So,
Wow, that's fascinating. That'll be exciting if you do that at some point.
Well, you know, I almost, here's the thing. We talked about it before we went on. Part of me wants to tell everybody about these things that I'm working on because, you know, I'm a writer, producer, and I get excited and I want to talk about the things that excite me, the things I'm working on, the things I'm writing about. But then the other part is nothing ever happens, right? This is Hollywood. It's hard to raise money.
Sure.
It's hard to make a film about UFOs because the people who might give you the money have their own way of looking at it. They may not look at it the same way you look at it. So it gets really hard. And I don't like to go on your show and talk about something. And then, you know, I always get this because I'm sure it'll happen again today. We're talking about it right now. And somebody will write me an email saying, now, what theaters can I see your movie in right now? And, well, basically the answer is you can't. Yeah. The movie's not made. We're trying to get it made. And believe me, when it is made, I'll probably come to your house and tell you what theater you can watch it in.
Well, there's a lot of moving parts to these type of things when it comes to anything Absolutely. Like that, as you know. And, you know, I've done several screen tests and have been involved in some pictures for, you know, in the antiques world, not in the in the UFO world, but for different shows. And, you know, they may even make a pilot, but to actually get something launched and going, that's a long process, you know, and very listen, few make it too.
It's very true. Although here's the interesting thing. I've been lucky. I've had five primetime series that I created get on the air.
That's amazing.
They all happened relatively fast on top of each other. And I got to the place where I thought, wow, this is great. So you just write a script and they make a television series about it. But, you know, that was just sort of my early run of luck. And then you run into the real world again,
yeah.
You know, it's all percentages. You know, many writers have written dozens, if not 100 pilots in their lives, you know, and never had any of them made.
That's
or
right.
They had them made, yeah. But they didn't get ordered to series. Now, I also have kind of another life. I was the chairman of the Television Academy, the people that give out the Emmy Awards for right. A couple of years, notably during 9/11 when we had to cancel them. But the interesting thing is television is exploding exponentially. There were 11,000 members when I ran the organization and was its CEO back in 2003. And now there are 25,000.
Wow.
All right. So that's a pretty explosive growth. The amount of television series just at, you know, not even quite a decade ago was something like 200 plus, and now it's like 478 or some number like that. So we're in an explosion of material that's being made, and yet you would think that it would make it easy to get other new material and other ideas in there, but it's actually not that way because the streaming services. There is no streaming service that wants to say, yeah, bring us the stuff that Netflix wouldn't buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody mm-hmm. feels like that. They're like, hey, we only want to hear from you if you've got a top actor attached or something like that. So it's just as hard as it ever was. But the difference is even more people are playing in the game. So
right.
I don't know. Right. I don't know what that means for all of us other than I'm trying to use the sheer numbers and the fact I've been doing this for a few years to get a few UFO-themed projects, you know, out there, because I think the time, I mean, we'll probably talk about this, but the time could never be better to try to bring a few fact-based alien pieces, because, you know, not everything has to be an alien invasion. Not everything has to be an alien on board a spacecraft that's eating people one by one. Sometimes there are great cases like the Roswell case that should be explored properly. And another thing I have under option is the Captured book, also by Stan Friedman, but with Kathy Marden,
right.
Which is about the Barney Hill,
mm-hmm.
which I really think I hope to get lucky soon with that, because I just think there's just not a better case. It's
right.
It's all about the first. It's the first people that claimed abduction here in the United States. It's the first people that had missing time. It's the first people that got hypnotized. I mean, it's a great case. And all that, and they're dealing with racism and an interracial marriage. So
that's right.
It's got it all. So.
Another thing you mentioned, and in just about 2.5 minutes, we have to go to break here, but another thing you mentioned is, you know, the different ways to get things out there. And there's so many ways to get something out there. You look back, you know, years ago when you and I were both young, there was like five channels, and then so many people watching those five channels, and now it's spread out. I mean, our population's higher, yes, and all that, but everything is spread out. You have less viewership with so much going on and so many ways to access.
Let's cycle that back to the dark skies scenario. the numbers, the ratings that Dark Skies had on a Saturday night, where we basically got no promotion and we kept getting preempted and things like that. Yet the numbers that we had there would have made us a super hit on almost any streaming service right now. I can't remember if we won our time slot. We did a few times, but the numbers that used to exist in a three network universe were huge. And now you can have a hit. You know, most of your friends probably have heard of Breaking Bad, but I guarantee you not everyone has. There's lots of people that would go, yeah, I heard something about that. So we've lost the ability that we used to have when there were three networks, where literally you go to work the next day and everybody would say, did you see that Gilligan's Island? Man, was that funny. Well, we don't have that anymore. Now you can watch the funniest damn thing that was ever created in the history of television, and nobody will have seen it.
Unless they're talking about it on Reddit.
Yes.
Or you know what I mean? Then, something like that. Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes and, you know, all that type of thing. It all has a play in here.
Of course.
I think I'm going to go to break early since we're kind of pausing at this point. So we will be back in a few minutes, everyone. So hang in there. And we will be right back right after these messages.
I got a bad feeling about this. Race, come back to us. Earth to Race. Earth to Race. Please come in.
Okay.
You know, when I double mute my mic, I need to make sure I remember I do it. Okay, guys, we've got 3 minutes of this break.
Okay, excellent. So let's see. In the 3 minutes, we'll talk about, well, we really are not staying on or going back to any topic that we were talking about previously. But we'll in the 3 minutes that we do have here, let's talk about UFO sightings in your area. Are you aware of any in particular?
Current sightings?
Or just in historical? No. I mean, how long have you lived there, actually?
I've lived out in Southern California for almost 30 years now. And you know, historically, Los Angeles, Southern California has had more than its share of really intriguing sightings. And, you know, but I'll tell you something, Martin. What's really intrigued me is because people know me as the UFO guy in my circle, right?
Uh-huh.
So people know that if they talk to me about certain things, I won't laugh at them, because how could I? I'm writing about these things and all that. So I've had people over the years tell me interesting stories. Here's one that comes from my plumber. He was working on a sink, and he said, so you're the guy that did that Dark Sky show? I said, yeah. And he said, you know, when I was like 10 years old, 12 years old, he was going to school on Wilshire, elementary school on Wilshire, here in the middle of Los Angeles. And he said on a break, over 200 kids saw a metallic, cylindrical, wingless craft, you know, maybe 500 feet up, hovering over the playground. The teachers all saw it. The kids all saw it. He went home that night and he told his parents, and they said, well, that'll be great. We'll read about it in the paper tomorrow. Well, the next morning came. It wasn't in the paper. And you know what his parents told him? They said, never talk to anybody about this. They'll think you're weird. Right? So that's what happens with a lot of great cases, right? And yet that was a story where, I mean, I think if that happened today, it wouldn't be buried quite like that. I think it, because more people would be posting on social media about it. But here's a really great sighting, a really thing, and gone away. Answer to your question, though, I don't spend a lot of time keeping up on the latest particular sightings because I'm not essentially a researcher. Mm-hmm. You know, I have opinions, but I don't do a lot of original research. I do a lot of reading, a lot of thinking, a lot of writing, but, you know, not so much going out in the field and talking to anybody about anything. I probably should. I'm sure it's fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't do any of that myself either, you know, to speak of, but I love to hear you talk about your plumber. I love to hear stories from people like that. You know, someone that is not involved in the UFO field. Race, are we going back in? Should be 5 minutes.
Yes, sir. We're ready to go whenever you are.
We are ready here.
Well, I've got 5 seconds here, and then I can count you down.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. All right, here we go. In 5, 4, 3, 2.
All right, welcome back. My guest tonight is Bryce Zabel, and we are talking UFOs, etc., films, and all that. And we were sort of, you know, basically toward the end of the conversation before the break, we were talking about, you know, how difficult it is to, you know, get something launched when it comes to filmmaking and all that. There's and it's hard to sell too. I mean, you have to almost, don't you almost have to, even if you get, you know, producers that'll back you, don't you have to almost have something pre-sold or an idea, which, how are you going to market it eventually? Or do you just go with it?
You know what? My experience is just there's 1,000 ways to sell something. Right. And so I would never tell anyone there's a right way or a wrong way to do it. I will say that like a lot of businesses where there's a lot of money on the line, people are risk averse. Right. So the less money you spend on the project, the more they're willing to probably let you freelance a little bit. The more money that gets spent on the project, then people want to know, is this going to work? Am I going to get some of my money back? Right. So that does cause people to look at a project through different eyes. In other words, I don't think there's too many people running around Hollywood that know, like you do and I do and your audience does, about what's really going on in the ufology situation right now. They don't really know about, the only thing they know about Tom DeLonge is Blink 182. You know, they've heard basically maybe they heard Tucker Carlson talk about it or whatever, but they're not really dialed into it.
That's right. I agree.
And so anytime I'm in somebody's office talking about UFOs, the first hurdle I have to always get over is somebody will just go, so you really believe in this UFO stuff? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a hell of a beginning, because what it means is I'm not only there to pitch this story, but I have to overcome their objection to even thinking that it's, because they think it's just a science fiction piece. So from their point of view, you know, you could pitch, and this has happened, you could pitch, as we talked about, the Roswell story or Betty and Barney, and get a note from somebody saying, well, does Barney have to be black? Well, yeah. I mean, because he was, right? So you just have people that look at it like just a story that's a malleable story, right? Mm-hmm. Where we know and your audience knows this is the real deal. Something has been going on probably for thousands of years, all right? But for sure with some relative intensity since the 40s.
Yeah.
And for reasons that are still a little obscure, it's managed to be covered up or deflected from the public sphere of discussion all these years. And so now we sit in this netherworld where if you really pay a lot of attention to the topic, you know damn well something's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, something is going on, period. All right. We know this. But if you go outside and go talk to the people, you know, at your local grocery store, they probably don't really think about it like you do. Here it is, the most transformational thing that could ever enter in your brain and blow your mind, and we don't talk about it. It's unbelievable. Lots of people are going to go to Thanksgiving dinner from the time that we're talking right now in a couple of days, and you know what? It won't even come up for most people, all right? I mean, for most discussion, nobody will discuss the fact that we're not alone, and the evidence is they're not out there, but they're here interacting with us right now. But we don't talk about that. Now, how crazy is that? And if you dare to talk about it at your Thanksgiving dinner this year, I guarantee you, your chances are at least 60% you will be treated like the drunk uncle at a wedding. You know, the guy that's had that extra too many glasses of champagne and needs to sit down.
Yeah.
And I find this to be the craziest thing that I've ever encountered in my life. And I think as I get older, I get more frustrated by it, because I would like to believe that we at least are going to publicly own up to this in my lifetime. I don't think that's too much to ask. You know, I think that the idea that we could all sort of acknowledge that it's real and then start talking about what to do about it, I don't know why that's so radical. That seems like a pretty pragmatic thing to do. Now, I guess you could argue, well, the truth may be so freaking unbelievable and so disturbing that we don't dare talk to people about it. But I reject that. I mean, the truth is, if the truth is got a little blackness over it, it's still the truth.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't really have the option, I think, of waiting any longer. The planet is in disarray politically. The climate is changing in a way that's very problematic for our own survival, even. And if indeed there are other intelligences interacting with us, I think we better get on with that one, too.
Yeah. Last week, I had Dr. Jeffrey Bennett, astrophysicist, on, and a good part of his talk was about climate change. And the reason I'm just bringing that up, you just mentioned it, but I have to tell you, I don't believe there's ever been a time where I've gotten more email about that topic than than I have about, you know, UFOs. And mostly, you know, people are, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of people that are that don't want to look at it. I'll just put it that way. You know,
are you talking about climate change right now?
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, there are similarities between climate change and UFOs.
Well, tell me about that, because someone asked me about that.
Well, I mean, you know, and again, I don't wish to incite public political violence on your show or anything, but let's just make it as basic as we can. You take climate change, you take UFOs. The similarity between these two issues is that the evidence appears to say that they exist, okay? Yet, there is trouble in the public sphere discussing them.
Mm-hmm.
So we watch these things get more complicated and unsolvable, and we don't address them. So I do think one of the things that would certainly be good is if out of whatever's going on in our world right now, that the idea that we want to embrace what's really happening, what truth is, would be a good thing. You know, we can argue what causes climate change, but I think, is not the debate already settled that it's happening? I mean, I didn't used to have to evacuate my house every year or get ready every year, and now I do. So something's happening. And the same with UFOs. If you pay attention, I mean, what more do you need? The U.S. Navy says they're real.
Mm-hmm.
What more do we need? The only thing that I like about that, by the way, is that when I do start talking about it on Thanksgiving, I may not be treated like the drunk uncle at the wedding, mm-hmm. because some of these people will say, oh, yeah, so I read something about that. What's going on? Okay, now that's where I think it's great.
Yes.
Because then I get to say, well, now let's go back to 2017. Did you read that New York Times article? No, I didn't. Well, let me tell you what that's about. Another thing that I do, by the way, for people is I maintain a pretty large library of UFO books,
mm-hmm.
and I have duplicates of a number that I think are really good, and I'll loan them out to people.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody asks me on Thanksgiving about it, I'm going to run upstairs to my collection and grab a copy of something and run it downstairs and give it to them and say, why don't you read this and then call me and let's discuss it? Because mm-hmm. I think we have got to get this into the public sphere one way or the other. And the, you know, change tends to be not top down. It isn't going to be probably the head of the Pentagon announcing it. We're going to have to, from the ground up, change the situation on the ground so that the people up above feel like if we do talk about this openly, we will not screw everything up. I mean,
yeah,
that's how I look.
Yeah. I had, I mentioned this briefly on a show a while ago. I spoke with someone in my professional world and through antiques, actually, in art. He was having me look at some things that he wanted to sell. And he said that he was with the in the Navy for 30 years, recently retired, and he used to the last job for many years. He was out in California at some base in Southern California, and had something to do with flight control or something like that. And so I mentioned to him, you know, just to see his reaction. I say, hey, did you see the, you know, Navy announce, you know, that they're going to be looking into UFOs or can report UFOs? And he said, well, you know, I used to see, we used to see these things on radar that would appear and disappear and do all these unusual maneuvers. But he says, but I just thought they were experimental aircraft from the local area. He mentioned some base they may have come from.
Right.
But that's all, that's, you know, that's all he just assumed that's
what
they were.
But you know what? And you know what I would say to that person? I'd say, well, you know, that's probably a pretty good assumption. When you see the things flying around right now that exceed our ability to comprehend how they do that, because we don't have aircraft that do those things, you still might say, well, it might be secret technology that we've got, or the Russians, or the Chinese. But then you say, do you think anybody had it back in 1947?
When they were doing the same thing.
Do you think when these things were flying around Washington, D.C. in 1952, that somebody had that ability back then? I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just have to keep moving ahead. I'll tell you my – are we about to go to a break?
No,
or
no, we have 15, 10 minutes.
Here's just something that is – something that I'm kind of intrigued that we haven't done more of, which is we're in the middle of a presidential campaign. More candidates than ever before are out running around Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina and Nevada, and they're all holding town halls. Mm-hmm. And they all accept questions from the audience. So for all these millions of people who actually think of themselves as UFO knowledgeable or UFO activists, why aren't they going to some of these town halls and asking questions that are respectful questions, saying, are you aware that the U.S. Navy has released these three videos and that the U.S. Navy now confirms that unidentified aerial phenomenon are something they're looking into and they're working on reporting procedures? So, Mr. or Mrs. Candidate, my question to you is, will you support congressional hearings on this topic, and will you dedicate yourself to government transparency on the topic? Why don't we have somebody? Why has not one person asked that in any of these town halls? And why are we not writing these reporters who are asking questions at debates? Why aren't they asking about this? Why is the fact that there are things flying around that interfere with nuclear weapons, why is that not something that should be discussed in a presidential debate or at a town hall? I don't get it. And I'll tell you something. I have my own little Twitter presence or whatever, and I've noticed that when I tweet about, you know, can't wait for the truth to come out on, you know, UFO reality, and I put a nice picture with it, I get a lot of likes and, you know, and I get a lot of comments and all that. But when I say, why doesn't somebody go to a town hall and ask a candidate about UFOs? No, I don't get hardly anything. So I just go like, what I think needs to be happening right now is that UFO reality, UAP reality, has to switch and start taking in some of those public activist tactics that have existed for various social issues, whether it was women's suffrage or the civil rights movement or anti-war or whatever. These are political social movements. Where are we with this UFO thing? We should be pushing forward the relatable storylines and asking our representatives why they won't investigate it. And you could say, well, they'll never investigate it because no one will tell. But that's not the point, is it? The point is not that the candidates will get it and not that the congressional people will understand it immediately. It's that we'll force people to talk about it, and it'll get into the national dialogue and the international dialogue. And slowly but surely, this will become something that people can talk about in open public forums. That's really what I look for.
Yeah, really interesting. Now, I remember Hillary Clinton was actually in New Hampshire for the 2016. She was campaigning there and was, I don't know if you heard, but she was asked by a reporter the very thing you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I actually had him on the show briefly right after that. But yeah.
the 2016 campaign was vastly better for UAP reality disclosure issues because you had Hillary Clinton saying, "I'll talk about it," and Podesta. And this has been a disappointing year when there's more going on than ever, more things to discuss, and you know, the Democratic debates are plowing the territory of Medicare for all ad nauseum. And I'm not saying that's not an important issue. It certainly is an important issue, what healthcare people are going to have. But I would also think if we're worried about safety and security and healthcare, I think if somebody can turn off a nuclear weapon at will, that's a safety issue. I don't know why we're not looking into it. So just my hats off to any of those, like Mark Walker, I guess, a Republican congressman, has been active in trying to push for those kind of things. I think it's smart. We need to do that.
Yeah. Well, there's also, you know, think of O'Hare or any of the possible, you know, encounters when commercial or, you know, planes are involved. And there's, you know, sky safety, you know, for one. And it's baffling why that's not taken more seriously, you know, right there.
It's, but see, I think though that that's the essence of it. The way in to the barn, the way to get your head into that barn is through air safety and nuclear weapon security. Hmm. Those are the issues that you can ask about in a public forum and say, are you, you know, I'm not, and you can literally, you can say, look, I'm not saying they're from another planet, but I'm saying that the U.S. Navy says they're not ours. So, Mr. or Mrs. presidential candidate, what do you think about it? I mean, and, you know, to this date, you know, we at least had Hillary Clinton in 2016 talking about it. This year, to the best of my knowledge, we have Andrew Yang saying something casual at a refrigerator in a New Hampshire newspaper office, and maybe somebody else, and I can't remember who that was, and just casual comments. So I don't know. So there, that's my soapbox. But again, it's boring apparently because nobody thinks we should do those things. But I do. I think it's a political issue now. I think we are moving rapidly into what Richard Dolan and I wrote about in our book, AD After Disclosure, where we said it's not going to be a clean line. It's going to have ups and downs and starts and stops, and it's going to be a little bit messy, but we need to get on with it. I always quote Dr. Strangelove, where the general says about – he's talking about nuclear war, but I always think it applies to disclosure. It's General Buck Turgidson, and he's talking about nuclear war, and he says, "I ain't saying we're not going to get our hair mussed." Okay. And that's, I mean, I think that's the true statement we can make about what disclosure is going to look like. But it does us no good to wait. Waiting serves nobody at this point. I do think it's a little dicey that Donald Trump might become the disclosure president because he's just very unpredictable, obviously. And I'm not trying to get in a political debate with anybody about anything. Just saying, that'll be a dicey thing when that happens. But it really, I think the issue is so large that it transcends the political occupants of the White House. It's just one we have to get on with. The world has to get on with it. And frankly, if the U.S. can't get its act together to start talking about this openly, then I'm all in favor of France or Brazil or Russia or China getting the ball rolling. You know, let the Pope come out and start it. I don't care. Somebody needs to get this thing going.
And it seems like the snowball effect, too, with something like this. And I was thinking we're on that roll, you know, ever since the New York Times article came out back in 2017 and, you know, the videos, as you mentioned earlier. And it just seemed like we were on a roll. Things were happening fast. And it's still like it, little bits and pieces are happening, like, you know, we talked about earlier, the Navy, you know, looking for ways to have the pilots report, you know, encounters and things like that. So there is some type of momentum, you know, that is happening, but I don't know where it's going to go. And you mentioned earlier that you're hoping in your lifetime. I do as well. I hope that, you know, we'll know more. I don't know if we'll ever, though, clearly know exactly what it is or who they are, you know, that part of it may be really hard to figure out.
It's like that famous quote, the universe is not only stranger than we imagine, it is stranger than we can imagine. Right? So whatever is the truth is going to be kind of mind-blowing. But I would say this, and we said this back when I was running the TV Academy. We had this phrase that we used, which was, all of us together are smarter than any one of us. Okay? Now, let's think about this issue where you're saying, we don't know exactly what's going on. And that's probably true. It's probably true that even people who are, quote, in the know aren't as in the know as they'd like to be, all right? But the way we've organized the world right now, we have very small compartmented groups of people probably talking about this and not talking in a global way to each other, but talking on very specific things. What we need is to energize the scientific, cultural, political community that humanity represents and get everybody talking to each other at once. And I wouldn't be surprised if we can come up with some pretty good theories about what's going on, and some of them may be disturbing, but I think if we get started, it's better than not getting started. Certainly better for you and I living to see this through.
Wow. You know, I just had a listener just text me and say that there was supposed to be supposedly a UFO sighting over the White House today. Did you?
Whoa.
I haven't. Finally on the White House lawn. No, I haven't.
Damn it. Here we are talking about this, and we could have been. Oh, my God. Well,
no.
You know what? Maybe it's going to take that. Maybe it will take that.
Yeah. I'll check out the news after the show. But no, I have not. I've not heard that. Unfortunately, Alejandro wasn't in earlier. He may have had some information about that, but I have not looked into that. Been pretty preoccupied here up in Maine. Well, this is great. One of the things, though, I do want to tell you that I think is kind of funny, and I mentioned this a while back, is I was watching a 1950s or 60s documentary about UFOs, and there was a guy in black and white, and he was probably in his 50s at the time, and he's saying, I just want to, you know, disclosure to happen in my lifetime. He didn't say disclosure, but something else.
Right.
And
of course.
And he just thought, I mean, right now I feel like something's really close. He felt like back then something's really close.
Oh.
You know?
So. You know, I told you I have a good UFO library, and one of the things I've done is I've collected them over the years, and I started doing this pre-Dark Skies. But when we got into Dark Skies and we wanted to get the timeline together so that the show would have this internal consistency, I started putting the dates on the edges of the books, so, and then arranging them on my shelf in the date in the order of their publishing. So over the course of time, as I've read through these books, you do see a trend where people – going back to the 50s, going back to Donald Kehoe when he's writing his books, and he's talking about disclosure is imminent. He doesn't call it disclosure. He calls it the silence group that will break their silence. But people have been hoping for this change. And that's why I say we've got to also start thinking of it now that we have a little more scientific information and we can start to disclose it to ourselves. We need to move ahead scientifically and politically at the same time, because simply just dumping on the world, by the way, you know, yeah, some of those things, they're real. It's going to cause our hair getting mussed a little bit, right? So we need to have a political plan how we're going to integrate this into our society, this very high degree of uncertainty it's going to bring. And very little it's very interesting because when Dolan and I were writing AD After Disclosure, we would sit around and we'd toss these ideas out to each other, and we would say to ourselves quite often, I sure as hell hope somebody else who actually knows some of the details about this is doing what we're doing right now, because if they're not, I'm worried. I mean, there's no evidence currently that anybody in the know on the inside has actually been thinking about how society is going to shift and twist and turn when this all starts to come out. And I think there's a 50-50 chance right now that you and I will see a And by disclosure, again, I'm not saying the president goes out and lays it all out and hands out, you know, terabyte, 50 gigabytes of photos to every reporter. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But by disclosure, I mean that general sense that all of us have that something is real. We can. It's okay to talk about it now. It's okay to study it, and that we should have transparent relations between government and science and academia and all that, and try to get to the bottom of it. And I think we are getting closer to that. That's the only hope that I can hold on to.
Right, right. We go to break in about 2 minutes here. As far as the government, you know, I've always thought that it's possible that they may, you know, I think it's kind of obvious that they probably know more than we do because of the, you know, the many cases where film was confiscated and, you know,
right.
situations like that. But I've always, I've said this on the show a number of times, I've always felt that they probably don't really know any more than we do of what it is, just that it is. You know, I wonder what your thoughts were on that.
Well, the 2 minute version is that I don't think it's effective to say what they know in the government, because I don't think there's a universal government that knows something about UFOs that's keeping that from us. I think some people know more than others. I think some people in government don't know a damn thing about it. I think it's a really mixed bag. And obviously, the people that know the most have the biggest decision to make right now. They have to make a decision for the world. They have to decide whether they're going to be on the side of transparency or whether they're not. You know, you got to pick a side at this point and start to come clean about what you do know, which is why, I think all of us who have had either seen something or had something happen to us have a greater responsibility than ever to step forward and start to talk about it. So just as a tease for what we might talk later, you know, one of the things I've been talking about more these days is what happened to us at Dark Skies, where we were approached by people who said they were from the Office of Naval Intelligence, not the Air Force. Mm-hmm. Also, my partner was friends with a member of the Reagan cabinet who told them some hair-raising stories about aliens and UFOs. And just the sense that those of us who have heard things, we don't have to vouch for their truth or not truth. We just have to vouch for what happened to us or what we know or what we believe, because we have to somehow get this topic off the podcast dedicated to UFOs, right? Nothing wrong with your podcast. Don't get me wrong. Love your podcast. But we cannot ghettoize the topic into these narrow places where it's okay to talk about it. We have to do more and more of what has made us, I think, all very happy in the last 2 years since December of 2017, where we've seen more and more people who just don't talk about UFOs start to talk about it.
That's right.
And that is really great stuff.
It is. Excellent. Well, all right, everyone. We're ready to go on break. We'll be right back right after these messages. Hang in there. All right, everyone, that's it for the free part of the show. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, we'll be back with Chris Lambright. Anyone can listen to the full hour and 50-minute shows. All you have to do is sign up on our website, podcastufo.com, for as little as $2 a month. I encourage you to go over to Patreon instead. That link is right on our support the show page. Also on the sidebar on our website, podcastufo.com. Don't forget to check out the blog over there this week, as every week we have a new blog up. And that's it for now. Thanks so much for listening, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.